What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this bonus episode of the Good Take Podcast. Today, Zevin and I are stepping away from the breaking news and the current events of the sports world to do just a couple of really, which will be really fun interviews with a couple of really cool guests. First up, a golfer, a journalist, and the host of the Why You Suck at Golf podcast, Avery Dovsek, joins us today. Thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by. We're really excited to talk to you about your experience with podcasting and golf and sort of what we can do to get better. We just both really recently started taking up the game, so we're really looking forward to seeing how we can get better.
So we have the addiction where we're
absolutely
we're in it. Yeah,
exactly. So just to get started, I guess what made you get into golf and get interested in it?
So growing up, I was actually a volleyball player. I'm pretty tall. I'm 5'10", and I was addicted to volleyball. Like, loved it. I was pretty good. I was an outside hitter. And as I got older, we realized volleyball was a really expensive sport. And a lot of people don't know that, but when you're on a club team in California, because that's where I'm from, it's about $4,000. Well, this was back in the day, like when I was interested in playing, but $4,000 for a club team season, and then not including travel and all that. And that was just a lot of money for my parents to justify for like a seventh grader. And so I played at the beach a lot, and I played with my uncle who still is a really good volleyball player, and he kind of trained me. And then my dad really wanted me to take up golf. My dad would golf like once a month, like wasn't super serious about it, but he realized like how many scholarships and how much like room to grow there was for female golfers. So he asked me to take it up, and I hated him for it. Like for months and months and months, like we had the worst relationship. He dragged me out of bed twice a day. To go play golf and go practice, and it really made me hate him because he saw something in me that I was too young and was, I fought him to see it, you know? So he even said to me, I remember, like, I'm never gonna come watch you unless you make varsity freshman year of high school. So that kind of fueled my fire a little bit when he said that, because all I wanted to do was prove him wrong. And I worked really hard at it. I ended up making varsity my freshman year of high school, went on to be team captain, MVP, go to our state trials, all that. And then it was time for me to look at colleges and stuff. So I wanted to go somewhere completely opposite of California. And I wanted to throw myself out of the bubble we call Orange County, because that's where I live. It's very, everyone's kind of the same. So I wanted to put myself somewhere different, which is why I started looking at schools on the East Coast. And I knew I wanted to be in journalism, wasn't exactly sure what kind of route I wanted to go, but I visited New York for the first time and I was captivated. Like, I loved it. It was bigger than anything I could have imagined in the movies. Like, it was awesome. So that's kind of why I ended up in New York. Hofstra had a good program. They gave me a good offer, and that's why they kind of won, is the proximity to the city and their communication school, as you guys know. So
nice. I can definitely vouch for that. So I guess, yeah, you know, your passion is evident, and getting to sports media is your dream, just like it's ours. How did, like, specifically the name for the podcast, I laughed when I first saw it, the Why You Suck at Golf. How did you sort of come up with that? And then what's it been like to sort of grow it? Because it's, you know, you're getting some eyeballs for sure.
I came up with the name, like, I've actually wanted to start it for a couple of years. And I always say oh, that shot sucked, or like, dad, you suck. Like, we always joked about it and like said it very casually. And then like, I kind of was just like, why you suck at golf? Like, it just stuck. Like, I liked it. And I think it was also unique coming from a girl, because there's tons of podcasts with guys talking about golf. It is common. So when there's a girl with such a controversial title, I guess, it kind of like gets people's eyebrows raised. And whenever I say people chuckle or people laugh, they find the title humorous, and that was the goal. And at first I was going to do every episode like on a new thing of like why people suck at golf. And now it's kind of just like I do it whatever I want, because I realize, you know, even that's the name and people might click on it to find out why they suck at golf. It's my podcast at the end of the day. I don't have to follow any rules or guidelines. This is my thing, my platform to express what I want to talk about. So that's why I've had on some journalists, some professional players, some tour caddies. I have some awesome people lined up. I have like 4 or 5 episodes ready to go. I'm just like wait to roll them out. But yeah, it's just been an awesome space for me to, you know, get different sides of the industry and interview people and get their different perspectives on the sport. So it's been fun, and definitely there's going to be some more episodes and telling people why you actually suck at golf, but I like to throw in a little bit of everything, keep it interesting.
Really, really quick, do you have like a favorite, I guess, that you've had so far or that you will have? Has there been like a, like, oh, that was awesome, you know? Just like in terms of a conversation, or I mean, really maybe Tiger Woods, it might be number one no matter what, but you know.
You know, that's hard because everyone has had such a different perspective. I had Webb Simpson's caddy, who Webb is a professional golfer on the PGA Tour, and he just won a very large tournament. So speaking with his caddy was awesome because his caddy is such a geek for golf and has such a great personality that it was just an awesome conversation. And, you know, I not only do I feel like my listeners could benefit from it, but I truly benefit, like, listening to what someone of that level says. And I definitely took away some stuff. So I think from a golf standpoint, that was my favorite guest so far. And it was fun to listen to. It was fun to record. Like, it was so easy. Like, when conversations are easy, you know it's gonna be a good episode, you know? So I have some good people, though, I'm really looking forward to recording with.
Nice. So I actually listened to the first one you did with Paul Tesori. That's his name, right? Webb Simpson's caddy.
Did you
like learn anything from him? Like, was there any insight that he gave you? I remember he talked a lot about sort of the mental side of golf, and sort of being, you know, staying in the moment, not letting yourself be too, you know, not letting yourself hang your head for too long. Was there anything like really insightful that you sort of gleaned from him, like that maybe the average golf watcher sort of might not guess?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for me, and it's such a maturity thing. Like, I've always been really mature, but I'm also very competitive. So when I would hit bad shots on the course, I would let it bother me for holes after. And like, I'd think about it after the round and I'd fester over it, and it would definitely like affect other holes. So if I hit a bad shot on hole one, like, I'm still thinking about on hole four. And as I've grown older, I've gotten a lot better at like letting it go and just, you know, it's just golf. It's just a sport. Like, bad shots are going to happen. Like, there's even a book called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Like, that couldn't be more true. So he said something super interesting, which was like him and Webb have a 10-second period where they allow themselves 10 seconds to get mad about a shot. And then after that, there's no more discussion about it. And I thought that was really cool, and something I even talked to my team about, because now I'm a team captain. And I said, you know, guys, like, we should like think about trying this, because it really, a bad shot can really ruin other holes if you let it. So that whole 10 seconds of like, you can get as mad as you want for 10 seconds, but after that, let it go, was an awesome thing to hear.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think I might have to start trying that in my game, just to make sure I don't stay out of my own head too much. You know, kind of going off of that, Zevin and I are both really novices when it comes to playing golf. And we actually gave you a chance to look at our swings and our sort of technique on the range. I don't expect you to sort of remember what we look like perfectly, but do you have any sort of notes or feedback for us?
Why do we suck at golf?
Yeah, exactly.
So my biggest feedback is, Zevin, not to roast you, but you are playing golf, not basketball. So number one, ditch the basketball gear, because if you look good, you feel good, you play good. So that's really step one.
The reason I wore it is because, so my first year that I was playing, I was terrible. And like Seth Curry's a really good golfer. And so I figured, I thought it might get some good mojo. That was my thing. But you're not wrong. But that was just, that was
so
my
you were thing. Channeling. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
My mom was thought it was ridiculous too.
So my biggest thing for you, Zevin, was just standing too far away from the ball. So when I'm sure you hit it to the right?
Yeah.
Your driver. Do you hit a lot of your shots to the right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're standing a little bit too far away from the ball. But if you like move your feet like 3 more inches, you'd probably hit the center of the club face a lot more. But your swing wasn't bad at all. And then Alex, my biggest takeaway for you was just working on slowing down your backswing. Because slowing it down is really going to set your hands and set everything and make it a lot easier to come through the ball. So like not trying to rush, and like a big thing to help is like exhaling before you hit the ball can really help that. But yeah, that's my biggest takeaway.
So then are mistakes common then? Like what sort of mistakes do you usually see from people who are beginners? What are like the most common, like classic, like of course, like he has his hands. Like I've seen, even at the golf range, I've taken a few lessons and I've seen other people doing the same drills that my teachers had me do. What are like the common like sort of mistakes that you see from people who just have no experience at all?
The biggest one is people want to see the result of their ball before they hit it, which I find very fun, because how can you look at what you just hit before you hit the ball? And a lot of coaches say like, keep your head down. But what I like to tell people to do is pick a dimple on the ball and stare at it, and don't let that single dimple leave your sight. Another thing is like when you line up to the ball, try to focus on keeping your head an inch behind the ball that's set up. So that like more, instead of like people pounding, like keep your head down. Those two things are kind of going to do it naturally, because you're going to be so focused on staring at that target, and keep your head behind the ball is going to like just get everything kind of flowing in the right direction. Another big thing is a lot of baseball players who are transitioning into golf like to pull, if you're right-handed, they like to pull their left foot off the ground in their backswing, and then opposite if you're left-handed. You need to keep both your heels on the ground in your backswing. That's just like something you gotta do. What else? I don't know. The main thing is just the head. Like people just really lift their heads. They're so like curious to see where their shots go.
Yeah, I mean if I had a nickel for every time I've been told to keep my head down and not look at the flight of the ball, oh boy. So like sort of kind of on a related note to that previous question, what advice do you have for like beginning players who are just looking to improve their game of things they can do to get better?
Practice. Stop going and getting a tee time for 18 holes when you haven't gone the range. If you have no fundamentals, you're not going to play well, period. So you need to practice. That's like, it's just so like repetitivity and practicing is just going to really dial it in for you. And also having like, your confidence grows from your practice. So you can't just go out and get a tee time and be like, oh, I'm going to do super well today. No, you think you're going to do super well today if you go on the range earlier and you've been hitting it perfectly all day. Like your confidence is going to stem from your practice. So I think a lot of people just want to get out on the course and play with their buddies, but they don't spend any time at the range grinding and playing and, hitting iron shots and hitting their distances, or even knowing how far their 8-iron goes. That's huge. A lot of people don't practice their short game and don't practice putting. They're so focused on their iron shots and their driver, and they're trying to like impress everyone that you can't get the ball into the hole at the end of the day. Your putter is around half your shots in a round. Like, why aren't you practicing that? It just doesn't make sense to me. But that's my biggest tip, is like go the range and practice. Stop wasting your money on tee times. Go get a bucket of balls, grind it out, throw some headphones in if you need to, and just enjoy it. Like, enjoy the day to be out there.
Hey, so what's your favorite club to use, like, for your second shot? I know I have, like, a three hybrid. It's like a three iron, but it has like a bigger hit face or a bigger club face. Gosh, I need to learn my terminology better. What club do you like most for your second shot?
Well, obviously it depends the distance I have in.
Let's say like a par four, like.
So if I hit.
Sorry, go ahead.
What'd you say, a par four what?
I said if it was like par four, 300, 350 yards, so it's like kind of halfway to the green, maybe.
So I hit my driver, and then I probably have like a nine iron in. So I like that club just because it's really consistent and it's a shorter distance, so my odds of missing are a lot lower. That's probably a good one.
Definitely. So now, sort of shifting from the beginner's game to the pro game, what sort of, you've been around pro golfers, like, what have you seen from them that it sort of impresses you the most in how they play?
So that's interesting because really what separates a professional and, let's say, a collegiate athlete or, someone of high level still is very minimal. It's definitely between the ears and your concentration and focus and having, you know, the confidence in knowing your shots. And again, like, that does stem from practice, but really people's short game is what's separating the good to great golfers.
Nice. Now, where would you say that your game is at now? How would you classify yourself? I assume you don't suck at golf, but where is your game at? Where would you, if you had to give a report card to yourself, how would you assess it?
It's tough because I'm a little bummed right now because our season just got canceled for the fall. So the CAA and Hofstra announced that all fall sports are done. But it's not where it should be. I mean, because of the pandemic, I have been out of competitive competition for quite some time, since the beginning of March. And now I don't know when my next competition will be, if it's going to be in the spring. That's an incredibly long time to go without playing competitive golf. Playing around with your friends is very different than playing around with opponents. Your whole mindset is different. You can't replicate that, really, that amount of pressure you have. So it's not great right now. And it's just kind of being bummed. And, like, I'm letting it fuel my fire. And it's nice because I have all this time to practice and get better. But it also sucks to not know when the next time I'm going to play competitively is.
Now, what do you think of Colin Morikawa? He has more wins than he has missed cuts. He is, I think, the second longest made cut streak to start a career other than Tiger. Like, the dude is a stud. Do you see any Tiger in him? What are your sort of assessments of him so far? What are your thoughts on his game just in general?
I think he's really going to be a star player. Like, he already has shown us that he's a star player, but I think he's going to be at the top of the leaderboard for a long time to come. I mean, his swing is beautiful, and he was holding, like, the milkshake. I thought that was funny. He just seems like a good guy, and, like, honestly, to be good in the PGA Tour, you have to be likable. Because when fans start coming back, you don't want to get booed. He carries himself well. He plays a great game of golf. And I think he's really going to be a contender in, you know, the top ranks of the world.
And you mentioned, Zevin, you mentioned Tiger a minute ago. You know, in the match against Phil Mickelson, we both thought he looked really good. Like, as good as we've seen him in a long time. You know, do you think he's back in that top tier of golfers?
I think he is. I think he is a machine. I think he hits the ball and he just knows golf, you know, and that sounds so dumb, but he is a machine. He is built for this game. He has shown everyone what he's capable of, and I don't think he's done yet. I think he sees these little kids coming out of college and getting the top of the leaderboard, and I think it fuels his fire. And I'm excited. He's finally back to golf this week, so it'll be really interesting to see how he finishes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, right before we came on, I got this notification that I guess his back was hurting, and he was like, oh, like, sometimes this is going to happen. But it certainly seems like he, you know, I mean, I know a few years ago, like, he could barely play with his kids, and then obviously winning the Masters, I mean, it's one of the incredible stories ever. As you start to wrap up here, if we're talking to someone, you know, who's in the golf world, we have to ask, you know, the obligatory Tiger Jack Nicklaus question. How many majors will Tiger Woods end up with? And will he pass Jack Nicklaus? What is your crystal ball? What is it telling you?
I think he will pass Jack Nicklaus. As far as how many, I don't know. I think he could go on a pretty good streak, though. But it will be interesting to see how he does without fans, because, you know, if you've ever been to a professional tournament, there's a Tiger roar when he's on a tee box. Like, it must get him going and light his fire. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he performs and if that is a contributing factor to his success in having all those fans. I guess we'll see as this pandemic unfolds. If no fans are not permitted still, we'll really see how he plays. But I definitely think he has the capability to pass Jack Nicklaus.
And then before we wrap up, what other big name is going to have, like, a big next year or 2 years, would you say? Like, if you want to get, like, Rory, Jordan, or, like, amongst, like the big names, like, who's really going to start playing well in your mind?
So a big name in the media right now is Bryson. He put on a lot of weight, whether that be muscle or fat. He put on a lot of weight over quarantine, and he's hitting the ball miles. So I think he's going to be a lot to talk about. And if that does give him an advantage, we'll see. I think Brooks Koepka and his mental game is really going to keep him at the top of the leaderboard. I think Webb Simpson. I might be biased just because I like his team and I like his caddy, but I really think that they will climb to the top. And I hope Jordan makes it back into those top tiers, because he's an incredible player. And I really loved back in the day to see him winning all these tournaments. So I think those, Rory, he's incredible. I think they're all so good. It's incredible what really separates them from tournament to tournament, because it's not like they have bad days. Like, they're still playing incredible. It's just these scores are getting lower and lower, especially with technology. And it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Nice. Then, do you have, like, a favorite course? Do you have a favorite course, favorite golfer? Do you even have a golfer that you sort of reminds you most of yourself? What are your favorite player and favorite course? Make it simple with that.
Oh.
I guess you're going to say Webb Simpson.
This is hard. I've played a lot of greats. No, I don't really know him that well. But course is really difficult just because I've gotten the opportunity to play such great courses. So I don't know if I can answer that. There's been some great ones in New York, some great ones down in California, some great ones down in the Carolinas and Florida. I can't answer that. But as far as players, I love Tiger, obviously. Brooks's mental game is something I aspire to have. Phil's social media appearance and his ability to hit bombs is something I also aspire to have. They're just great, great guys, you know?
I will say you should also aspire for Phil's trash talk too, but I don't know if you've seen any of his.
Exactly.
So.
All right.
Yes, exactly.
All right. That is all we've got today. A huge thanks to Avery Dostek for coming on with us. Yeah, be sure to check out the Why You Suck at Golf podcast. I think wherever podcasts are available. And thank you so much.
Want to plug anything else?
And.
Yeah, no, that's it. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. We are going to take a quick break here on the podcast. We'll be right back in just a little bit. Stay tuned. Be sure to check out Good Take with Alex Hutton and Zevin Schuster on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else podcasts are available.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at AlexHutton35. That's Alex Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N 35. And at ZShust9, that's Z-S-H-U-S-T-9. And please follow us, spread our work, and we hope to see you back here again soon. Thanks so much.
Now back to the show.
And welcome back to the Good Take Podcast. Now we are joined by Brady Silverwood, who, among other things, ran across the United States of America, not figuratively, literally, over 7 months, ran over 3,000 miles. Thank you so much for joining us, Brady. We really were fascinated to hear about you and your story.
Of course. A friend of Brandon is a friend of mine, so anything to share my story and maybe teach you guys a couple things and maybe learn from you as well. So yeah,
and first I both of us want to say we both love your hat too. I think that it's very
it's running
the
founder of,
the
guy at my run club, Luke, he made this design as kind of like a sarcastic joke, it's pretty funny because that's kind of how running is the first few months of running, you're like, oh, this sucks. Like, why do people even do this? And then you kind of reach a certain threshold where you start to like it. So
nice.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't agree with this. I think running's awesome. It's just kind of a joke.
Okay. Awesome.
Did you wear that hat at all during your run?
No. They came out with this design like a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Got it. Today we just got a few questions for you about your experience with the run and sort of everything surrounding that. So just to get started, what inspired you to run across America?
So I was at a pretty low point in my life with a lot of depression, and I was drinking a ton, partying a lot, and the business I was I own this women's clothing company called Sunny Co. Clothing. And we were doing awesome, man. Like, sales were amazing. And I was able to travel around the country. We went to Miami for a full month and we were like partying out there while also doing our business. So on the outside, everything seemed like so nice, but I really was dealing with a lot of just, I think like I was questioning what my purpose was in my life, and I wasn't getting like true fulfillment out of the work I was doing. So around this time I was actually living out here in Los Angeles, and my roommate on a Saturday morning, I was really hungover and I hated running at the time, and he dragged me to this run club and I didn't want to go, but somehow he convinced me, and I went with the group, and you could run 3, 4, or 5 miles. And I remember when he got me to go, he said, you could walk or run. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, they must not be like super intense runners. So that made me feel a lot more comfortable. And then I ended up going, I barely could do the 3 miles, but I got it done. And then, it felt good. I knew that running was something healthy for me to be doing in my life. And it was one of those things that was like, wow, it's like 10 a.m. and I already got a run in on a Saturday morning. So it really made me feel good. And then, a few months passed and I started going to more of the run clubs. And then I did my first half marathon in November 2018 out in Santa Monica. And then in March of the following year, I did my first full marathon, the LA Marathon, 26 miles. So again, like it was definitely a slow incline, but I kept challenging myself. When I got the half marathon done, I was like, wow, I never knew I was even capable of doing something like that. So I started to think, what else has my mind told me that I can't do that I actually can, so I really started questioning that stuff. And then, in March, was when I just wrote in my notebook. I woke up this one morning and I was like, that same guy that could barely do the 3 miles just a couple months ago and that was going through a lot of depression, like what if that guy could run 3,000 miles and just show himself and everyone else that, you know, anything's possible. So it kind of became that mission of 3 to 3,000. And I looked it up, the U.S. across was about 3,000 miles. And yeah, man, from that point on, it was like, I didn't tell anyone about it for a full month. So I could just kind of think about it. And once I started announcing it, it was like, it was good because I almost built up this, I guess, like thick skin in a sense of believing that I could do it. And when the feedback came in, like my dad initially tried to talk me out of doing it. He was like, you know, you've told our family, but you haven't posted on social media yet. Like, you know, you don't have to do this. So like, there's people like that, that tried to talk me out of it. But like I said, I kept that 1 month to myself to really, I guess, strengthen my like confidence that I could do it. And yeah, man, I got so excited, and I just thought, what are the basic logistics that I could get from New Jersey to California? And it was like, all right, I need running gear. That's an easy one. I'll need somewhere to sleep. So I had to figure out an RV that's just kind of like what made sense for me. So I ended up renting an RV. And then the last thing was just, I'm not going to go alone. So who would I bring? And the first person I tried calling up, he would have been perfect for videography. But I didn't really know him too well. And he wanted to go, he wanted to go in July and I wanted to go in May. And I just told him, I was like, I can't wait that long. Like, I have to go right now. I have to go do it. And then, so I was a little bummed when it didn't work out with him. But then I called up my friend from college, Nate Heiser. And within like the first minute, he was like, yeah, I'll do it. And pretty much just put his plans for the summer to the side and came out there to New York. That's where we originally were. Then we went to New Jersey, got the RV, got all the gear, and picked a random spot along the coast and started.
That's so close. I was going to ask you, like, we were so totally curious, like, what you did for, like, sleeping, logistics, all that stuff. We're also curious, like, I don't know, I mean, did you just, like, stop and buy food? Or, like, what were, like, your meals? Like, where did you get food?
I mean, yeah.
You probably aren't going to know where there's going to be food in, like, you know.
So I'm, like,
yeah.
I'm like, the biggest, like, growing up, I would just always have cereal. That's, like, my go-to, like, breakfast meal. And then my parents would always, like, make me, like, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I'm very simple when it comes to that stuff. So we would go to, like, the Walmart, stock up on snacks, like, you know, non-perishables. We would get fruit and that type of stuff as well. But, yeah, we would try to get, like, stuff we could, like, microwave in the RV, like, oatmeal, soup, that type of stuff.
Isn't oatmeal, like, awfully heavy, though? Like,
oatmeal? I mean,
And did you have it, like, with peanut butter, maybe?
Like, Quaker Oats. Yeah. It wasn't, like, too heavy, yeah.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, the funny thing about it, Zevon, is, like, I had to just eat so much food, man. It didn't matter if I was hungry or not. I had to eat food because I lost probably 20 pounds during this whole experience. And I was eating more food than I've ever ate in my entire life because I was burning so many calories that if I wasn't replacing those calories, like, I needed the food for fuel, if that makes sense. So that's kind of the relationship I had with it. And same went for hydration. I had to so many times wake up in the middle of the night and just chug a water bottle because I knew, like, if I don't do that, I'm going to be in trouble for the next day.
I was going to ask, so you mentioned your dad was like, you don't have to do this. Like, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? Like, what was, like, the general reaction to it when you first started telling people? You mentioned you said you told your family first. But, like, what about, like, when you posted on social media and stuff? Like were people like hey, like, did your account get hacked? Like, what did people say originally about, you know? What was their initial reaction to your announcement?
It was mixed. You know, I definitely had some people that were just like, oh, my gosh, you're going to crush this. And then some people are like, wow, you know? So definitely in the middle, I'd say probably more support than people trying to, I guess, talk me out of it or whatever it is. But the funny thing about, like, when you do something like this, and even when I was out there on the run, is whenever people leave feedback or tell you something, it's always their opinion of it. You know, I was watching this video today, and it was, do you guys know who Gary Vee is?
I do not.
The name sounds slightly familiar.
He's an entrepreneur, but he was watching some other motocross biker just, like, you know, just crush down this, like, crazy hill and going, like, super fast. And his whole reaction in the video was just like, oh my gosh, I would never do this. And it's like, your feedback is just the way you perceive it. So when I was out on the run, so many people would focus on how many miles I had left as opposed to, like, how far I had already came. So yeah, that was another thing, is like, just remembering to stay in my kind of mindset and not letting feedback distract me from feeling proud of what I had accomplished, and also staying focused on what I had to still accomplish, because it truly was like a marathon out there. It was like, you know, day to day, you just have to get up and do it. And if you're able to just, like, understand that you're going to have days where you don't feel like it and you don't want to do it, but if you just put in the work, if you just show up, then you give yourself that chance, that opportunity to succeed. So
how many miles were you running each day?
So the first month, Alexander, I averaged 10.8 miles per day. And then I just worked it up as the run went on. So the last 2 months, so first month I was probably averaging about 2 hours per day. I would run about 11 miles. And then the last 2 months I was running every day over 4 hours and about 20 miles every day. Yeah.
Wow.
So I've never ran in my entire life, you know.
I don't think I've ever run more than 5 miles at any one time. So to be running 20 a day is.
Dude, it's one of those things, man. Like, I've always believed that, like, the mental over physical is such a real thing. And doing this proved it. Like, it was so much more mental than physical. You know, I would even look at my body through the journey. And, like, look at my legs and be like, wow, I've never seen muscles like this on my body before. So I almost felt like I was just along for the ride. You know, my mentality was so strong that my body, I knew, would just adjust and kind of catch up to where I was at, you know.
Hey, so, like how often would, you know, like, while you were running, would there be a time when you'd just be like, man, like, F this, like, I just, you know, like, just really wanted to just go, like, sit on the beach somewhere? Like, how often did you,
yeah,
just, I don't want to say the word quit, but how often did you want to just, like, pack it in for the day?
Yeah, no, it's a valid question. There really, ironically, there really weren't that many times when I was on the run. It was always, like, before a run. You know, once I got the shoes on and I got moving, even there was one day where I had been battling a cold in Tennessee for about a week, and I kept running, and, like, I didn't take a day off. I was, like, literally drinking, like, Dayquil before going out and running. And I don't suggest doing that. I was just like, you know, I had to get this done. And yeah, this one morning I was just not feeling it, did not want to go on the run. And, like, my buddy Nate got a video of me, and it was probably the slowest runoff I've ever had. It was like a fast walk, you know. I was just barely running. And as that run went on, like, I got it together and I was able to finish strong. So I think it was always before a run, you know, I would have thoughts. And then when you speak it into reality, that makes it a lot more real, I noticed. But yeah, dude, there was a couple days. I can think of, like in New Mexico, I remember just being in so much pain and just feeling like, oh my gosh, like how am I going to put my body through this for another, I think at that point it was another month and a half. In Tennessee, there was one day where I just, like you said, I from San Diego, I was like, I just want to hit the beach today and like just do nothing, you know? So yeah, man, plenty of those days, plenty.
Now, one thing I'm curious about personally is the sort of the preparation beforehand. What was the training and the diet like in the time leading up to the run?
So that's another wild thing is I was training for a half Ironman and a marathon in March. So the beginning of the year, I was working out a lot. As far as running goes, though, like I look back on my miles. In the month before leaving, so April of 2019, I was only averaging 3 miles per day. So I was in decent shape, but to almost, I heard someone else say this, and I think it's a perfect explanation, is my training, I almost did the training during it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I mean, especially about like the grad, the
it's almost something you really can't train for because yeah. It's such a long run. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. Now, did any of the stops along the way particularly stand out to you? I'm thinking about that from like more sort of a human perspective, like any of the people you encountered, any stories from that?
I mean, West Virginia, if you guys have never been, it's beautiful. You definitely hear all types of things about, you know, maybe some drug problems that they have out there. But we had a great experience in West Virginia. We actually ran through this small town called Richwood with 2,000 people. And it just so happened that there was a long stretch in between the towns in that area. So we stayed in the one town for about 3-4 days. And like I had to pretty much, to put it in perspective, say I finished my run 30 miles away, we would go sleep in that town for the night, drive back like 15 miles the other, or 30 miles the other day, and then I'd run 15 more, and then come back to the town, and then go back 15 the next day. So we did that and finally got through the town after like 3 or 4 days. But we literally met like a couple of the store owners. We went to like a local concert. They gave us a tour of their firehouse, one of the firefighters there. So that was uncommon on the trip. We usually would pass through, so on some days I would run through like 2 towns in one day. So we usually weren't staying in towns, but we ended up staying in that town. And there's a few other places like that. And yeah, man, people, even before they heard the story, they were really friendly. And then once they heard the story, it was like, they were just, you know, would pay for our meals. They would give, I was raising money for charity. So they give me money towards my charity. And yeah, the people that were placed on the run helped beyond my understanding at the time, because I was so focused on the run. But looking back on it, they added just so much depth to the trip and really gave me that, I guess, support. And at times I needed that to get outside my bubble that was always just focusing on the running. I needed that kind of relief to just enjoy a concert or whatever it was. That was really important.
Yes, it's funny, like you mentioned, like the other people, and Alex and I were talking last night about like, oh, it must be fun, you know, so you're just at a restaurant and like, oh, what are you guys doing here? Oh, I'm on vacation with my kids. And then how about you? Oh, I'm just running across America, you know, like how did that go? Like, did you have any times like conversations like that? Like,
I have a really funny story. So
yeah, no, it's here.
I was running, it was probably in, I think it was New Mexico. And I was running on the 10 freeway, and keep in mind, most of the freeways that I would be running on were not like state highways, so you were able to run on them. And then once I got into New Mexico, I was running on the 10, and you're not supposed to do that, but I was just like going for it. And they actually didn't pull me over police till I got to Arizona. So I literally ran through a good part of New Mexico on the 10th. And there was this one truck stop I'll never forget. And it was just to the side, and I saw some dude outside his car, and I ran by him, and I was like, where are you going? I just yelled at him. I was like, where are you going, man? And he was like, I think he said something like, I'm going to Las Cruces. And then I was like, oh, nice. I just came from there. It's really nice. You'll enjoy it. And I just kept running. And I thought to myself, we're in the middle of nowhere. So he's probably thinking in his head, where did this guy come from? What, you know, where is he running? And yeah, it was funny for me. I don't know if he realized what I was doing, but.
He probably thought you were following.
We get so many funny responses. Some people would just be like, wow. Then some people, it would like go right over their head, where it was like, they would give us no reaction. And it was almost like they didn't really process what we said. And then other people just straight up didn't care. But majority of people were pretty blown away, though.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, something we were curious about is we both have horrible senses of direction. Was there ever how did you deal with navigation? Was there ever a time where you got lost or made a wrong turn or something like that?
It's like, wait, you don't want to run an extra few miles because you got lost, right?
No, I have to give credit to Google Maps, because thank God I used Google Maps walk-in directions the whole trip, and they only led me astray like two times, or maybe three. But overall, I mean, every day they're pretty spot on. There was a time in Arizona where they wanted me to run through like a U.S. Air Force base, and and like, dude, they led me to the gate, and I'm just like, are you kidding, Google Maps? I can't just go through here. And like, sure enough, like the Air Force people came up to the gate with their guns and everything, and were asking me like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, dude, I don't know. I'm running across America, and Google Maps led me here. But no, all in all, like Google Maps crushed it. So if it weren't for that, man, like, jeez, it would have been a lot more difficult. And I would just charge. That was another thing. I was able to charge my phone overnight in the RV. So every run, I was pretty much working with like 100%. I had a couple runs where I would have to go to airplane mode and maybe I would be lower, but I didn't have one run where my phone ran out of battery. So
you would just like run with your phone in your hand?
So I'd always put it in my pocket, but that's another weird thing is I got very used to running next to like close to cars. I got very used to just like running, holding my phone up. I would be like FaceTiming people, and like, it got to the point, man, where I would be calling someone and they wouldn't even know I was running. I'd be like, yeah.
You didn't sound out of breath at all?
Yeah, I was just so in a flow. And yeah, it's crazy how that works, because when you are out of shape, that's when the breathing is just like, you know, you feel it. But once you get in good shape, it's like, I could have been multitasking and doing a lot more things, I feel like. Yeah.
That's so awesome. I was going to say, is there any like, you mentioned the people. If you could take one moment and like just take a mental picture and just post it on Instagram to sort of share with the world, what would it be? And then what would the caption be of that sort of Snapchat?
Oh man, let's see. Oh, I know it. So it was one of those, and this is what's funny about it, is like, it wouldn't have worked on Instagram. It was one of those moments, like, you just had to be there. It was in Arizona. We were in Arizona, out of all the states, Arizona, it kind of works as a grid. So a lot of the times we actually had to, I was just running through the desert pretty much on like backwood trails. And, there was this oh geez, what's it called? I'll probably think of it later, but there's some like national reserve that I was running through, and we ended up just sleeping out there for the night. And like the closest highway was like 50 miles away probably. And like, we're just out there by ourselves. And like, we just went up on top of the RV and we were watching the stars and everything. And yeah, it was just one of those moments that was like, you know, everything in life just slowed down, and it was a special thing. So if I did post it, the quality probably wouldn't have came out that nice, but I probably would have just been like, I don't know, stars looking nice tonight.
Nice. Like that.
Yeah. Was there any part of the journey for you, whether physically or emotionally, you know, you talk about how important the mental side was there any part of it in any aspect that was really surprising to you?
I knew there was going to be a lot of injuries and pain, so that part of it didn't surprise me. I knew I was going to have to eat a lot. That didn't really surprise me.
Oh man, you're flummoxed.
If there wasn't anything that particularly surprised you, that's fine too. I mean,
yeah, I mean, and I'm not trying to act like I knew it. I knew nothing.
No problem.
Going to happen out there, but maybe the hydration. I going into it would not hydrate that much, and I think I realized early on that if I didn't hydrate out there, there was one run that I did in. I think we were in like Virginia. And I was running real good, so I tried to like beat my personal best half marathon for the day. And I ended up like almost having like heat exhaustion, like a heat stroke or something. I was just so out of it. And I had to drink Pedialyte. I told Nate, I was like, it was also like in the probably high 80s or 90s. And he got like some frozen towel for me. So yeah, I think early on, I just realized that hydration was going to play a really big part in it. So maybe that would be a surprise. I mean, I really didn't think finding anywhere to sleep at night would be hard. And it really wasn't. We had maybe a few times where like a parking lot security or a police officer would come by and make us move. Maybe like 3 or 4 times. But other than that, we would sleep at grocery lots. We'd sleep just like if we were in the middle of nowhere, just find some place to pull out the RV. But yeah, we didn't have any problems really with that front. Yeah, that's about it, man. Yeah.
Then did the RV just kind of follow you as you ran pretty much? Or did you like
so
at the meet by the end of the day? Or?
Yeah, at the beginning he would, and then as I started like really going further and longer every day, I would just text him at the end of a run my location, and then he'd come out to where I was. Yeah, it was funny, man. Like everyone would always ask me, "What does he do when you're running like for that long?" And yeah, I really don't know what he did.
That's awesome.
No, he probably watched a lot of Netflix and stuff and was just chilling. But
nice. I was gonna say, I mean, did he make any video or a compilation of you over the 7 month journey too? I mean, is it like where could we find that too? I mean, I would love to. It can be made like his own Netflix show. I feel like.
Yeah. So I'm actually working on maybe in the future there will be a documentary. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of those clips. I mean, he's not like a videographer, but I did have a really nice camera and wanted to capture a lot of that stuff in case we did do a documentary someday. So yeah, I honestly probably what I'll do is like post a couple to YouTube, like just messing around in the RV videos, you know.
Nice.
And sort of just sort of a quick question, kind of along the same lines. Hollywood story, big budget movie. who do you want to play you? If we were to make a big, you know, Hollywood movie about your journey across America, who's going to play you?
That's a great question.
Ooh, okay. Have you guys seen the show? And I just think of this because he doesn't like 100% look like me. I think there's a little resemblance. Have you seen the show Atypical?
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
Same.
Oh, okay. So the main guy's sister's boyfriend, he's like got blonde hair, and I think he actually played a runner in another movie, but he's probably around the same age as me, a little old, maybe he's like 27 or something, but yeah, as far as resemblance, and he has been in a movie where he was a runner, so maybe him. I don't even know his name.
Nice. I was going to say, you look a little bit like Sean White, the snowboarder. Do you ever get that occasionally?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm honestly seeing it with the hat and everything. And the hair, yeah.
How often did you guys, like, take a rest day? And then how, I don't know, like, I guess towards the end, you seemed like you ran every day. How did you regiment it, at least in as you were sort of getting acclimated?
So I tried to just take rest days when I felt like it. So I went into the whole thing, like, I think honestly the first few weeks I was thinking I'm not gonna take a rest day, which was just crazy.
That's what everybody says, right?
Yeah. And day 23 I took one, and I remember thinking it was because my body just felt really sore, and I remember thinking the next day I didn't really have to take it. And then the next time I took a day off was like day 65, I want to say. And that was because I was having really bad back pain. So I really tried to reserve it for like injury days, or like when we were in Nashville, I had my friends from LA fly out from the run club, and they ran with me, and we like went out into the town and stuff at night. So I took like 2 days off there, but honestly, I got there before they got there. So like there's a day of like I could have ran, but I would have had to come back, and we were all gonna run together on the Sunday. So yeah, there was a couple days where it was just like tourist days. All in all, the whole trip, maybe I took like 6 injury days and like 4 or 5 tourist days. And then the whole trip was 218 days.
Nice. And then that's like categorically insane. I was gonna say last question before we wrap up. I love how you mentioned, you know, just sort of the body being capable, you know, of things the mind could never dream of. I don't know if anyone out there happens to listen to this, you know, who just has a dream. What would be your advice to just, you know, achieve the, you know, proverbial unattainable? What's, you know, how would you approach it?
Yeah.
For anyone who's older, yeah.
Something I'll say, and like, again, I know this is true, and someone might be like, oh, this guy, you know, maybe this isn't true, but I know, like, for a fact, I really, like, truly never even thought I was capable of doing a half marathon. Like, that was not in my wheelhouse of, I can do this. So what I would say to you is, when you see, it's very easy to compare yourself right away when you see someone achieve something so great. But a lot of the time what society doesn't focus on is like all that hard work that they had to do before they got to where they were. And along the way, I would just set small micro goals, you know, if you don't get it right away, don't get discouraged, you know. If your goal is to say lose 5 pounds in a year, and then, you know, a year's passed and you've only lost 3 pounds, like keep going. Like you don't have to stop just because you don't get to that number you want to get to, you know. And keep, I think you don't necessarily need to believe you can do it. There's many times I didn't even believe 100% I could do it. You just have to believe that there's a chance. And I think that's a big key, is like just wondering, what if I could do this? And then, you know, you put in the work and anything's possible.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to plug? Any social media, anything?
I mean, I do have a new book out called 9 for 9 on Amazon, for $9 paperback, $5.19 ebook. So yeah, it's all about the 9 lessons I learned running across America and 9 pairs of running shoes. So yeah, if you guys want to check that out, I could use more reviews on it. Right now it's number 1 in new releases for running and jogging on Amazon. So, yeah. Use all the support there, but no, this was amazing. I'm glad Brandon connected us, and
yeah, me too.
If you guys need anything else, just let me know. Hit me up.
Also, my mom works at a bookstore, so I'll definitely turn her on to the book.
Oh wow, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I actually ordered a ton of author copies, so I get it like on a huge discount. So I'd be willing to ship some out to your mom.
I would love to. Yeah, I'd love to check it out.
Definitely, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Well. Thanks, everyone. Please subscribe to Alex and I on YouTube. Check us out on Apple or Spotify. And then follow us on Twitter as well. And then go get Brady's book. Go get it and order as many copies as you can. Awesome. But thank you so much, man.
Yeah, of course. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. See you. You too.